Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with us. Thanks for being part of our day. You're going to be glad you did, because Joan Pride is here. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan Pride, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be back.
It's good to have you back. It's like a dream come true, isn't it, Joan?
As always, or yeah. A nightmare, depending on how you look at it.
Hey, Joan, one of the first things... by the way... Folks, as you know, Joan lives in D.C., and she's a weekday customer of the public transportation system up there.
Yes, known as Metro.
Mm-hmm. And so, Joan, I'm so glad you're okay.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a very horrific tragedy that occurred. One red line train plowed into another, and now they're saying that nine people lost their lives,
including
one of the operators, that it was a switch problem. It was a complete... Because those trains are operated automatically, and I think the poor operator didn't see the other train until it was too late. The computer was telling the train there's no train there, and it's when in fact there was.
Right.
And she tried to brake, but it was way too late.
Yeah.
Because she was coming around a curve and saw the train at the last minute. So I don't think it was her fault at all.
So
but,
literally, it really was.
I could spend the next hour on my soapbox saying how this shows the need for some dedicated source of revenue for Metro because they've deferred maintenance too long. But I won't do that.
Well, we'll learn, won't we? We'll find out about that. We'll find out that whether it was something that could have, it was just one of those things, or if it was something that was a maintenance issue. That'll come to light.
And, oh, it will. It will. Yeah.
And so.
And if it does, I'll be getting back on my soapbox.
I'm sure you will.
I just want to warn you now.
I'm sure you will. You're ever at the ready soapbox. I'm glad I don't have one of those. But anyway, we're glad you're okay. We're sorry about those other folks who were injured, and certainly our hearts go out to those people who were killed. But one of which was the operator you talked about.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you know that's just a horrible thing, but you know, Joan, life is dangerous. Be careful out there.
I will.
It's a dangerous world. But apparently, the government is starting to think that that the food that we eat could be dangerous, Joan.
That's what we're saying this week. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to ramp up the regulations. Talk to us about this.
We're saying this is interesting. I didn't know this. We were saying brace for a sea change in food regulation. We're saying it's the first overhaul in more than 70 years.
Huh.
And we're saying there's broad consensus that this is needed. And I think the idea is that they're going to be strengthening the Food and Drug Administration in terms of their enforcement authority.
So what this means, you know, and I, Joan, I don't know. I'm having a hard time seeing the need for more of this. Maybe I admit to being not aware of issues that are out there. I don't. All I know is I consume food that other people make, and I pretty much don't get sick. And so, and I know there've been issues, Joan. But you know, if you think about it, Joan, America has the safest food system on the planet. Would you agree with that?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, do you know anybody who's gotten sick and issues.
Actually, yes, I do. I mean, I don't know them personally, but there have been plenty of outbreaks of salmonella and other things.
Okay, but I didn't say nothing happens. My point is, if you look at all the food that we consume here that other people make, we got a pretty darn good system. And I guess what I'm getting at is, it's just like this. It's just very much like this train situation, Joan. I mean, that was a horrible situation. But if you when you move around in the world, things happen. You know, everything isn't perfect. Things break, things fail. And what I'm worried about, Joan, is overregulating to the point that it seizes up operations, that it costs too much. You know, Joan, if you think about it, nobody need ever die in an airplane crash anymore. You know why?
We have
the technology to put parachutes on airplanes. I don't mean individuals. I mean, well, the whole thing would just kind of, you know, float to the ground. Mm-hmm. We have that technology. We don't do it. You know why? Because it costs too much.
Yeah.
And so, this is interesting. You guys point out that that the stakeholders though are lining up, and the consumer industry, the consumer groups, the industry groups, the scientists, lawmakers apparently think it's time. So I don't know. One of the new focuses that you guys point out is on prevention from farmer to retailer. They're going to change some of the standards. Now, Joan, I don't know exactly what that means. Apparently, there's going to be new rules for harvesting fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Here's something that I'm, in my cynical way, Joan, I see opportunities in these changes, and just look for it. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we should start looking for language that people are going to, or the government is going to want to influence how you and I eat.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the quality of what we eat, but how we eat. You know, I've been hearing the president recently saying things like, you know, I want people to learn how to eat better. I want them to, in other words, he wants to have influence over how people eat. And I got a little bit of a problem with that, Joe. And I wonder, and I'm going to be watching these regulation issues, because I'm going to be paying attention to that.
Right.
If the regulations start to sound like, okay, Jim, you know, oh, you can really only buy one hamburger because you don't need two hamburgers. And that's a silly example, but I'm going to predict that we're going to see some of that in these regulations. Imports, Joan, you guys, down the page a little bit, you guys talk about, and I think this is a good thing, because what did we run into? Didn't we get some bad baby food from China?
Apparently, yeah.
And dog food, too, right?
Yes.
And so
that was a big, big problem.
Listen, my mother cares more about her dog than she does me. So she'd be more concerned about food coming to her dog than food from China than food coming to me.
I'm not commenting on that.
Joan, I only have my tongue somewhat in my cheek on that. all right, we're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we got a few more things, just a couple more things on this, because it's going to cost you money. These regulations are going to cost you money at a time when food prices are already pretty darn high. 20 after. Right back after these messages with Joan Pride.
I don't care where it goes. Gonna climb a mountain. Half my dream. Yes, right between the sun machine. On the cloud of sun, I drink in the night.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking it out and using it. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter, which we send you every Sunday afternoon by email. Don't forget to check out my blog, which I posted to recently. And the new blog post is about I use Star Wars and Star Trek as a little bit of an analogy in that, so I hope to check that out. And social media, too, by the way, that's all part of the deal. Joan and I are talking about, Joan, one last thing is the cost for, you guys do point out, though, that the cost for regulation might be offset by what it's already costing us when we have some kind of an outbreak like Salmonella.
Right.
That you said that the outbreak cost the peanut industry recently about $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, one of the things that I always wonder about regulation, Joan, is, you know, sometimes when things happen, it doesn't happen because there was no regulation. It's because the original existing regulations weren't properly enforced. And that's one of the things I'd be curious to know. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, sometimes our government adds regulation onto things like Sarbanes-Oxley, for example. And so, you know, that was an unnecessary regulation that was a reaction to something. So, anyway, these are folks. This is part of the debate, and I appreciate Kiplinger bringing this up. Joan, over on page 2, the economy, inflation will tick up higher than expected this year, up to 1.5%.
Yes.
Talk to us about that. What's the story?
Well, to me that doesn't sound too bad, but I guess you have to compare it to last year when there was essentially no increase at all. And our forecast is based on the spike that we're getting in oil prices.
Mm-hmm. Oil prices and food prices are still up.
But I guess we say that this spike isn't seeping into other goods and services, so I don't know.
Well, oil prices, clearly up. They've just about doubled in the last 6-8 months, haven't they?
Yeah.
And so that's part of it. But now, interestingly, Joan, you know, the core inflation rate that the government, that the Fed tracks, doesn't include food or energy. What they call the core CPI does not include those two, and which many people think that it should, because obviously it affects our pocketbooks. But a little bit of, you know, this is the dilemma, isn't it, that the Fed has right now?
Oh yeah,
is the two horns that they're perched upon are fighting inflation, holding containing the prices of goods and services, and growing the economy. Right now, they're pretty much leaving the inflation alone and focusing on the economy, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bigger concerns, inflation for next year, Joan. I don't see how we won't have inflation with all the money that's being pushed in the economy. What does Kiplinger say about that?
Well, that's right. But also the fact that the economy is picking up steam would be another factor as well.
I don't think the economy is going to ramp up. The economy over the next 2 years, probably, the economy is not going to ramp up inflation a lot. Because, Joan, part of inflation is companies raising prices on goods, right? And people aren't going to raise prices on goods as long as the economy still kind of stinks. And with unemployment the way it is, and with the deleveraging of the marketplace, meaning people are not borrowing money to buy stuff anymore as much as they were. And as long as unemployment stays high, and see, I heard someone today, Joan, an expert today, say that he thought that inflation would peak next year at about 10.2%.
Say that peak next year.
It would peak. In other words,
you say 10.2%.
Yeah, but it wouldn't get to that point until next year.
Okay.
See what I mean? So
yeah.
So we're going to be increasing unemployment nationally into next year. And then we start pulling that down with people hiring, and so what I'm getting at is I don't think that the businesses raising prices are going to cause inflation, but so I'm not worried about the next 12 to 24 months. I'm worried about a few years out when the economy does heat up, and when all this money that's being put into the economy needs to go somewhere. I'm afraid that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
You're saying that by Labor Day, the upward push for oil prices will ease. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And so next year, the bigger concern is next year, right? And so what are we going to do about that?
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Not buy things?
No. you can't be charged for something you don't buy, can you?
Yeah, see?
Right. But as you say there, and as I mentioned earlier, Bernanke and the Fed will tolerate inflation. They're going to have to get over inflationary concerns in order to allow the economy to run. No question about that. We come back, we're going to talk about GDP, folks. There's a new World Bank report that was out that gave us some pretty bad news on the global economy. We'll talk about that right after these messages. 29 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. I see it burning bright. It don't matter where it is.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're still in the economy, and the one of the things that you guys report is that we should be looking at, we should be anticipating the July 31st GDP report. Tell us why.
Well, the July 31st GDP report, we say, will warrant a closer look because there'll be more details on spending, sales, and production. Apparently, there's a major Commerce Department review every 5 years, and I guess it's just coming out now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, this will be another report farther away from the meltdown of 08.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have some new news there. But, Joan, there's some news that came out this week from the World Bank that kind of ruffled some feathers and got some people concerned. A lot of people thought that the global economy might be closer to, you know, to maybe negative 1% or less even from a global standpoint. But the World Bank report that came out just the other day indicated that it was about, that the global economy, the GDP, I should say, mm-hmm. for global, was down about minus 2.9%.
Yeah.
So let's call that minus 3%. And apparently that's, and so that's not good news. That's a tough one there. But Joan, also, you know, one of the things to that more and more people are pointing to is that in the recovery, that in this next recovery, India, but especially China, the BRIC nations, they call them Brazil, Russia, India, China, but more than that, China is going to be a big part of the recovery. And what I was hearing was that China is not big enough, the economy is not big enough today to recover the global economy like America has been in the past. You and I have talked about that
right.
in the past. But they're estimating that by 2025, not that far away, China's economy will be bigger than the United States economy.
Wow.
And will be able to pull, you know, to pretty much hold up the global economy. Or, Joan, not right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean,
how many years did we sit here and do kowtows to the American consumer for basically holding up the global economy?
Yeah.
Single-handedly. How many times have you said that?
That's right.
And so so it's going to be interesting. And which brings me to something Ted Fishman said to me, our China expert, the author of China Inc. We were talking about China and global ethical rules and behaviors, standard behaviors of commerce. And he said, and I was saying, you know, is China going to play by the rules? And he said, Jim, he said, what you need to understand is in the future, China will make the rules.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so, folks, you know, I know you don't like hearing that, and it's, I don't like saying it, but these are realities that I think are coming down the pike. And Joan, I think this is one of the reasons why America has got to look at itself, take mm-hmm. stock of what we're good at, and then what we do that nobody else can do, and make sure we focus on those things. And one of them, Joan, frankly, is alternative energy.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a side dish there, folks, on this report of the GDP report that Kiplinger points out. But I just think that's something that we've got to focus on. Joan, moving down on page two in selling, cheaper private label goods is going to last. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, this is kind of interesting. We're saying that the rapid sales growth in cheaper private label groups is expected to last, and I think of private label as, I guess, the label, you know, would you call that store brand?
Yeah,
I think?
Exactly. Yeah. It, yeah, or not. And store brand sounds like the cheap kind, but it might be a high end kind. It might be a high end product that I brand or you brand. It could
right.
be the Kiplinger, you know, high quality T-shirt or running shoes or whatever. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
But you're saying that we're talking about, here you're talking about the cheaper private label goods.
Yeah, and we're saying sales will jump 10% this year, and I think that's an indication that, you know, we're still in the recession.
Well, yeah. I mean, people are, this is all part of the deleveraging, isn't it, Joan?
Right.
This is all part of people, you know, not buying the stuff that they would like, but buying the need to haves, Joan, rather than buying the want to haves.
Yeah.
I think that's what that's part of. We're going to talk about email marketing and advertising when we come back. What's happening with that? You're going to be, I think you're going to like this number. 20 Tail. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
Back, it's 17 till. Little Steely Dan bringing us back. That's Peg, one of my favorite songs. Kiplinger has an outstanding website, folks, that I have been proud to tell you about now for many years. And it's kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. And you can get lots of good stuff there. But if you want to see, and a lot of it's free, most of it's free. But if you want to see what's really going on behind the scenes of all these little snippets that are in their publications, you need to be a subscriber, and they'll let you do that. You can do that online, and you subscribe to any of their publications, like the Kiplinger Letter, the flagship that Joan and I work off of every week,
mm-hmm.
and that's the Kiplinger Letter. And then of course they have the biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter.
Right.
The Biofuels Letter, that's the other one?
That's right.
And then there's that magazine.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
It's available on newsstands too, isn't it, Joan?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how about that phone number?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Don't forget to ask them for the 30-day free trial. I worked hard to get you that discount, folks. So,
okay.
So check that out. Joan, let's move down and talk about email marketing. I'm really glad you brought this up in the letter this week. Email marketing and advertising is up pretty high single digits.
Yes.
And it will be through 2013, you say. Tell us why.
Well, we say that providers of email services will gain from the focus on the low-cost medium. And we're saying... Now, we mentioned two firms here, Experian and Epsilon, and they help marketers develop targeted messages so that they don't kind of get lost in the rest of your email.
Mm-hmm. This is a very important thing, folks. This is, Joan, this is part of, a lot of people don't think of email marketing as part of social media. And it in a way it is not, and in a way it is. And the reason I say that is because, see, I don't like to use the term social media when what we really mean to say is building communities.
Okay.
See, your subscriber base to the news, to the letter, the Kiplinger Letter,
mm-hmm.
is a community. See, you for generations you called them your customers, right?
Right.
But they're really your community. And Joan, here's why. How often do you get a phone call from subscribers? Or an email, right? All the time, right?
Right.
You guys hear from them all the time.
That's right.
And so that means that there's a community. These are people who care about what you have to say enough to call you back and say, hey, I don't understand this, or I disagree, or tell me more.
That's
right.
It really helps us serve them better.
And that's the community part.
Oh,
see, that's the part about building community.
Wow.
And that's what Twitter does. That's what Facebook does. But those are social media sites, meaning they've developed technology to allow people to do what humans do, and that's aggregate.
Right.
We're gregarious people.
Are we?
Right? Yes, we're a gregarious species. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not, but I am.
Right, yeah.
And so most people are, but you're not. But
right.
but we're gregarious. We like to be right. around people. We like to talk and to visit and to share and to argue, et cetera, et cetera. And so So email marketing is all part of that. And now, but when you say email marketing, Joan, typically email marketing, you know, a lot of times people think of email marketing is strictly just sending a commercial to somebody,
right?
You know, a call to action.
Mm-hmm.
But the smart ones, email to email marketing is a newsletter that includes information that the user can use.
Yeah.
But also has a message in it,
right.
A commercial message,
mm-hmm.
And that's the community building, mm-hmm. Instead of just email marketing. So I think you guys are onto something here with this. I think you're exactly right. And there's another company that I do business with. They don't do the same thing as Experian and Epsilon, but they do. They provide services that will help people do that. And that's Constant Contact. They're the people that I use for my newsletter.
Right.
John, let's move over on page three. And the stimulus package, you guys say that there's some money coming, and it's becoming a steady stream. Talk to us about this.
Well, we say by Labor Day, about $125 billion will have been committed to all sorts of projects, healthcare, mm-hmm. housing, transportation, energy, water, education, all around the country. And that's and then we say by November, by Thanksgiving, about half of all the money will be distributed, and that total amount being $500 billion.
Now, see, my big complaint about the stimulus package and all the money that was allocated was that by the time it was really when it's really needed, it wouldn't be available, which is like right now,
mm-hmm.
and that it wouldn't be available until much later in the year when the economy is already recovering on its own. But I actually now know some people who are going to benefit from a business standpoint from the stimulus package. I've actually spoken with people,
mm-hmm.
who expect to do business because of the stimulus package.
Oh, that's good.
And one of them is a guy who's trying to create a wireless network across an entire state.
Well, that's a good deal.
In other words,
that's important.
Well, see a lot of small communities, Joan, mm-hmm. don't have broadband. A lot of tiny communities don't have broadband capability. And so he's got the technology to help those communities offer broadband in their area.
I see.
And so and part of that's going to be funded by grants through, I guess, the stimulus package that will come to these communities because the government wants to get people wired. And Joan, this is probably not a bad thing. You know, South Korea was completely hardwired for broadband by the government. So the infrastructure, basically, folks. Now they're not paying for people to use it for free. They have to pay for it, but the government put up the infrastructure. Tintail, I'm Jim Blasingame, right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, the cynical small business advocate, Joan Pride, when it comes to belief in the way the stimulus money is going to be played out in the economy. I predict, and it'll be 5 years before we'll know, but there'll be a report that will come out in 5 years, Joan, maybe less, mm-hmm. and it will show that the money that was put into the stimulus package wound up being wasted and abused, and the corruption. I mean, it'll wind up being the biggest debacle that we've ever had. I just don't have a good feeling about it, Joan. And so, but we'll see. You can't say that I don't put myself on record, Joan.
Right, that's
so
true.
We'll be able to come because if the report comes out and says, can you believe this? Every penny was spent well. You know, then you can throw it up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, let's move down and talk about financial services. Tell us about Sharia law.
Well, you know, Sharia law is very interesting. That's obviously Islamic world.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharia lending is very different than your garden variety lending.
Than Western lending, typical Western lending, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And we're saying that Sharia lending is catching the attention of non-Muslims.
But tell us what the big the big element of Sharia lending? What's the fundamental thing that differentiates Sharia lending from regular lending?
I don't think it says it here, but I think
interest.
You can't charge interest.
That is it.
I think you can charge a fee.
You do say that. No, you cannot charge interest. And by the way, folks,
religious rules that forbid
you cannot charge interest. Okay. That's Sharia law forbids the charging of interest. There's we've all heard of Dubai. We've all heard of Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. You know, we got the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, which is a number of little states down there along the Arabian Gulf or the Persian Gulf, depending on who you're talking to.
Right.
And which is adjoining the southeastern tip of Saudi Arabia. The one on top is Abu Dhabi. Then you got Dubai, which you've all heard about a lot lately.
Right.
And then right below that is a little state called Sharjah.
Okay.
And it's a very Sharia intense, at least it used to be, intense state.
Okay.
I mean, they really focus. Whereas Abu Dhabi's, you know, pretty in Dubai have become pretty Western. Well, right next door is Sharjah.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether they still are, but they used to be very Sharia focused.
Okay.
And I remember hearing about that's where you would go to borrow money if you were over in that part of the world, because the banks there did not lend interest, did not charge interest.
Yeah.
So what I don't know though is how does that work? But what you guys point out is that some just as some American businesses are trying to capture, for example, the Latino market, right?
Mm-hmm.
These people have money to spend. Let's do advertising for them. Let's offer them bilingual products, et cetera, et cetera. You guys say that some banks are looking into the possibility of making ethnic lending.
Right, exactly.
Lending. So I don't know how that's going to work, though, Joan. I can't wait to see how will they? I mean, this is fish and fowl. I mean, how do you put those two together? But you say look for mainstream banks to make a run for the ethnic market. I mean,
try.
So I don't know. It's I mean, as you say, if they charge fees, what's the difference in fees and interest? One of the things, Joan, in America, you've got to state what the real annual interest rate is, and that includes fees.
Right.
So how's that going to show up on the form?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question.
So, count on me to always do that.
Right.
Joan, one of the things that we've got coming up in the recovery is it's going to remind us that we've got a shortage of truck drivers, commercial truck drivers. You guys point that out.
Yes.
There, and that's something to think about. You know, back when the economy was booming, CDL, and that commercial drivers like CDLs, people with CDLs, and the ability to drive trucks, we're in a big shortage. And that's going to be popping up again. So folks, might be maybe a business or a career opportunity there. Joan, we don't have time to talk about the antitrust.
That's too bad.
But look for this. Look for the current administration's antitrust person, their czar,
mm-hmm.
To want to make U.S. antitrust look more like Europe. You know why I say that?
Why do you say that?
Because she said that.
Ah.
So watch for that.
Okay.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job. See you next
time. Okay.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post around the world, many still in harm's way. Ladies and gentlemen, let's never forget them. They're heroes. And God bless them. God be with them. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.